Lovely. Hi, Mum. She's watching at home. Only had two power cuts, one less than we've had today, so that's better than... we're doing better than SSEN, I think. So I'm going to give you a long story about my house. Get a house, it's fun until it's not fun, is essentially the story here. So just a bit of background. I'm a research physicist. This is my day job. My night job, I'm a pyrotechnician. And in between those two jobs, I'm trying to make my house suck less. I'm currently here as power, so if you have a power problem, please don't call me because I'm here. And the rest of power people are also here, so you're just not going to get any service. A bit of admin as well. I'm aware Steve Mould is on directly afterwards, and the intersection between us and his audience is probably a circle with me inside as well. So if the stage could delay him for some unspecified technical reason, that would be appreciated. And I'll be taking questions in and around there afterwards. A last bit of admin. I'm going to be showing you plumbing and electrics and stuff. These are governed by various bits of law, and you need professional certifications. Yes, there are lots of asterisks and special bypasses and ways around it, but that's far too technically complicated to get into. So generally, I would say consult a professional before doing any of messing around yourself. And in all the cases you're seeing, that has been done. So we'll start with my sad boiler times. So I was waking up on February the 8th last year, got into the shower, turned the shower on, and it was ice cold. So this is inside the boiler. You can see here what looks like a griddle. This is what burns the gas. In the bottom, you see two electrodes getting close to each other. That forms a spark, and the bigger long one detects, yes, there is a flame, the boiler is working, lovely. So I turn it on, it goes for about 10 seconds and then stops. I look at the lights of sadness on the front, and it says, it's not lighting. I look at the little hole on the front, there's a flame there. This sensor is no worky. On scoping it, you can see, about halfway through, you can see this line starts to go down. The sensor is picking something up. So the sensor's working, so the boiler control board is shot. This is a part that's about £300. I'm disinclined to pay £300. Even more so when you consider this boiler is about a month away from being replaced. I was very annoyed because when you go through and you buy a house, you talk to the estate agent, they say various things, and one of the things they will always say, it's a new boiler. Oh, here we go. Actually, it's more than £300, £342. So it's a new boiler. This is the inside of the boiler. Notice the date. The date is 2007. This is not a new boiler. Estate agents are liars. It always assume when they say it's a new boiler, it definitely is not. And this boiler is basically the end of its serviceable lifetime. So anyway, just a brief bit. I'm going to dox myself. This is my old house, and some of my old housemates are here. I have only told a couple of them that I was going to do this. This is my old house. Notice there are solar panels on the roof. That will become important later. Oh, there we go. I lived in Southampton. I still do. We had some water problems that may or may not have made the national news. So there's this one. Southern Water customers face water supply issues for 48 hours. In reality, it was more like 3 or 4 days. This article was the 21st of December. Some of our neighbors on the road didn't get water back before Christmas. We got quite a hefty amount of compensation. So remember, if you get water cut off, you are entitled to some level of statutory compensation. It happened again 2 months later. This time, somebody connected the output of the water treatment works and the input of the water treatment works together. So unfiltered water was about to go out, and it was caught by the fail-safe sensor at the end that locked the entire system down, and they had to completely clean the entire thing over the course of about 3 or 4 days. 4 days as it happens, and our MP got very upset. The problem with this is you get bottled water. You can see in the photo, you get lots of bottled water. This bottled water came from Turkey, of all places, and we had a huge stack of it for about 4 or 5 months in our hall. You can drink that, that's fine. It's very hard to use a toilet with bottles of water. You've got to sit there and open the top and fill it up with this specially imported Turkish mineral water to fill your toilet up. And you need about 5 litres. And they only give you, what, half-litre bottles? So you're using most of a case to flush the toilet for once. And that's the main thing I'm really annoyed at. I can deal with drinking water, but the flushing the toilet is quite a priority here. So I now have a list of requirements for my house. I want the water storage and resilience. I want to be able to flush the toilet when the water company messes up, which they're going to again, of course. I want to have upgradability for a heat pump in the future because that's becoming the du jour thing. There are various reasons why I'm not having a heat pump, which I can get into if you get me into the bar later. I want to have backup electric heating, which I'll get onto in a bit more about that later. I want to have solar hot water heating. So back to the solar panels. We were able to turn off the boiler, which was doing our central heating and hot water in the previous house. We could turn it off in about March and turn it back on in about late September, October. In fact, it was so... We never turned it on to the point where the gas meter started to run backwards because the thermal expansion of the gas in the, that was in the house slowly getting warm over summer pushed it into, back into the gas main in the road. Of course, if you report this number to the gas board, they don't care. They just look at the differential, so they mod the difference. So you actually start paying for gas you're exporting back to them. So if you ever find your gas meter going backwards, just wait, use a bit of gas so it goes forwards again, and then report that number. Wood burner. I quite like fires. You could heat the water from the fire. This is something my dad was looking into, and of course he ordered the wood burner thing about 20 years ago, and it's sat in the garage ever since. So I want to put one in, also to wind my mum up that I've got one before she has. I want a good toilet flush. I don't know how many of you have used a toilet that doesn't flush very well. I've used ones where you have to, do two or three flushes because it's so inadequate, it just doesn't do anything. I want a good toilet flush. I also want the bath to fill reasonably fast. So last week we were staying in an Airbnb while we were doing build-up, and that bath took like a quarter of an hour to fill. And by that point, the water started to go quite cold. So I want to be able to address that too. And the last thing is I want heating selectivity. I want to be able to heat certain parts of the house and not other parts of the house. So how can we do that? And I want set and forget controls. So this is the most controversial thing, and I'm aware that if I say this here, I might get hounded out of EMF camp. I don't do smart heating controls. I don't do smart home anything. I want dumb 1990s, 1980s controls. I want to be able to set it, press go, and then I want to be able to come back and it's working, lovely, job done. I don't want to touch it again. I don't want to change batteries everywhere again. So anyway, let's look at central heating. A good thing to look at, if this £10 Amazon thingawatt it worked, is this. So if you haven't, please watch Tim Huckins' Secret Life of Machines, the Central Heating System, because he explains it with nice visual props and all sorts of bits and bobs, which I can't really do here on this budget, on this time, in this space. The only problem is this particular screen grab from the show is quite blurry, so I'll get a slightly nicer diagram. So the standard UK layout for a non-combi boiler system, you have a boiler, it produces hot water, and then that gets pumped around a loop in your house. And then you can have a valve that can open and close based on a thermostat, which is connected to your cylinder. That heats up the cylinder, and that gives you hot water for taps and baths and showers and jacuzzis and things. You also have the cold water that gets heated. That comes from the street, and that gets tapped off, and that can go to provide your cold water taps. And that also feeds a tank in your roof. And this provides a local buffer of cold water to fill the hot water cylinder underneath. So this is where my water resilience is coming in. I'm going to try and put one of these tanks in. And then you also have another valve, which sends the hot water loop around the house and heats the radiators up, and that's also open and closed on a thermostat. So you can see here there's quite a lot of gubbins, and you can see there's where it says 1, 2, 3, 4 and whatnot. These are plumbing controls for if the loop gets too pressured, you can release the pressure. If it starts to expand, you've got an expansion vessel that's like a big balloon that gets bigger and smaller to take up the expanding water until it expands too much, and then it overpressures through the pressure release. It's got a filling point so you can put more water in, because if you've lost some, you want to put it back in at some point. And you've got what's called a dosing point, which is where you can put anti-corrosion stuff in. So you've got all these valves and other stuff in there. And this is quite expensive to do. So in the UK current climate, when you're building houses, you want to shave the money off. So we don't want to do any of that. We want to make this as simple as possible. So we want to get rid of all of that and go to this. So this is what a combi boiler does. It puts all of that plumbing gubbins in one box. You have basically your entire plumbing in a box. So instead of having a water tank and a cylinder, we just heat on demand. So the boiler can whack out loads of heat all at once, and it heats the water as it passes through. And then all of these valves and things are inside the boiler itself. So let's have a look at the anatomy of a combi boiler. So on the bottom, you have this box that will probably be in the kitchen, which is usually where they end up being put in the UK. So you have a gas pipe that comes in. So this is the stuff we burn to actually make things hot. We have a heating loop flow, so this is where the hot water comes out the boiler to heat your radiators up. And we have the return where it comes back colder going back in. And if you want some more information, there was a talk 2 years ago at EMF about how to set your temperatures up properly so it works. We then also have the mains cold in, so all that hot water we want to make for using in taps, it needs to be cold first, and it needs to come from somewhere, so that's where that comes from. We then have our domestic hot out, so this is where the hot water that goes into the house comes from, goes to, and whatnot. And then we have this filling loop, which, as you can see here, is connected. This is actually against regulations. You shouldn't actually leave it connected because it can fill with Legionella and all sorts. No one ever does that. So this is used for topping up the heating loop when it loses pressure. And we'll come to why it loses pressure in a moment. There's also the condensate pipe. So this is where some water that forms in the output gases, because when you burn gas, you get a bit of moisture, eventually comes out of this pipe, and this pipe then goes down to a drain or something. So let's have a look at the other MacGuffins on it. So we have a dial for hotness. How hot do I want my heating water and the sort of water I'm using in the sinks? We have a dial for sport mode. This is what I would just got. It's like, are we having heating? Are we having hot water? Are we having both? Are we having nothing? We also have the lights of doom, which tell you what the boiler's doing. And in my case, they were telling me very bad things. We have our ticking cactus, which is the horrible, funny way of setting the time clock. Goodness knows why these are still fitted on things, because they're just hideous. And we have the juice squirtiness indicator. So this is the pressure the pressure dial. So now let's have a look inside this box. So inside the box is all of our plumbing bits, which before were around the house, where a plumber could touch them. We now place all these bits inside a nice cabinet, where only a gas-certified engineer can touch them, so it's more expensive. So inside, this boiler is a particularly sort of Victorian, make-it-out-of-stone churches sort of stuff, because it's inside the boiler in the flame box. It's got all of these big refractory bricks. It was a very heavy boiler to remove. So we have our guff pumper. So this sucks all the exhaust gases and squirts it out of the house. And as I found out, it was squirting it technically illegally close to my neighbor's house. We have the spoilers. So this is the heat exchanger, which takes the hot gas that's coming out and converts it into hot water. We have our Avernus chamber, which is where the fire lives. And we have our hydro accordion behind. So this is the expansion vessel. And on this design, they put it at the very back of the boiler, so it's almost impossible to change. And because it's inside the boiler, it is tiny. It has an expansion range of about half a liter, which means that it cycles a lot. And what happens if you cycle this rubber a lot with really hot stuff, because it's right next to the boiler, it fails, gives up, and it just fills with water, so it doesn't do its job anymore. So what happens? When your water expands, it just overpressures, it squirts out the thing, so then you have to refill the water loop up almost weekly. So this is one of the main reasons why they suck, because they're basically designed for failure. They're the sort of iPhone of the domestic appliance world. And you have all the pipey bits at the bottom, so this is where all of those bits were, and what we're going to do now, instead of having them in a nice airing cupboard where you can get to them, we're going to put them in like 4 cubic inches at the bottom, underneath all the hot bits and the leaky bits of the boiler, so they're definitely going to get trashed. And in fact, the first thing to do when the boiler didn't work was a gas valve in there. Usually they stick, so the usual fix is get a screwdriver, get a hammer, bang it, and it should just unstick itself. Alas, not. The problem that we had was in the box of wires at the bottom, where the expensive board lives. There's also a pump in there, let's put something in that you need to get to the back of to remove. So we'll put it right at the side of the case. You have to pull the boiler off the wall to change it. So if you have anything wrong with this, it's usually, and what most people do, is they just change the whole lot because it's so fiddly and time-consuming to work on, you might as well just replace the boiler. And so we've ended up in this situation where instead of replacing a single part, we have to replace the whole blooming box every time. And this is why when anyone has anything going wrong with the boiler, they go, oh no, that's at least a grand and a half, because the boiler is about £800. So you can see here, this is a new build housing thing in Eastleigh. And you can see, if you look very closely, you see next to the downpipes, on the wall, on every floor, there is a black blob, and that's the exhaust port for the combi boiler in these flats. And the problem with this is that you usually see, on ones that aren't white, a nice brown going down the side of the building from all the rust and gunge and stuff that gets squirted out of the pressure relief valve after the first 2 years of operation. We're fitting these in new build things, and this is a problem when we want to put heat pumps in. So, what we're now going to do is play a nice game. What's that pipe? This is the audience interaction part. So we're only going to show you a selection of pipes from the house, and you have to guess what's in them. There? There? Do I need to stand this close? Ah, I think this is acting as a ground screen. So what's pipe number one? Josh, on the front row, go. A what? No, this is nothing. This was an empty pipe. It was a gas pipe. And the difference between an empty pipe and a gas pipe is an empty pipe is a gas pipe once you've punctured it. Let's try number two. What's this pipe? Here. No, this is gas. The big pipe is a live gas pipe, and the bottom one is the other end of the pipe number one. And look, if you look closely, you'll see it's not actually connected. Because let's cap the pipe off and make it look like it's connected and then just leave it in place. Also, you can see the archaeology of all the different types of wallpaper they left on the wall in the kitchen under the cooker. It's bananas. Let's go to number three. What's this pipe? And we're looking at the big grey one in the middle. Over here, you. Exactly, lead water pipe. So I thought, wow, that's disconnected. Lovely. I can go to the scrap merchant and get a bit of cash for that one. Let's go in number four, the black pipe in the bottom in through the wall. Any takers? You on the front row. Go on. No, that's electric. They put all the electric in rolled iron pipework in the walls. Oh, hello. There we go. We want number five. What's this pipework? That is gas. That's the old gas that was running the electric, not the electric, running the gas fire, of course. What's this pipe number six, this white one? No, this one was a pipe that Sky rammed through the underfloor of the house to put a Sky cable in. And then number seven. What's number seven? It's not, this is cold water. This is a lead pipe. That's the one that's feeding the house. That's problematic. I rang the water company up, and they are legally required not to use lead pipes for this job. So they send a person around and measure it. And look, there we go. There's the lead, if you find it, 2.36 micrograms per liter unflushed, which not above, not exceeding the, it's illegal to do this, and we'll get fined, but they went, we'll send some people around to swap it. And swap it they did. So you can see in the bottom right of this is the new water pipe coming in, and then this is connected to, at this point, a temporary backfeed arrangement that I shan't go into because that's too much for this talk. So we have this nice new tap, and this is them on the outside popping it in through the wall. So unbeknownst to me, they mould them in. So they dig a hole at the front of the drive, one at the back of the drive, and they use a little mould to dig through. Of course, trying to avoid the gas pipe, the previous water pipe, and the electric pipe, the electric cable that are all in the very tight driveway of my house. But don't worry, the electric board are going to have to do that as well soon. That will be a talk probably next time. Cylinders. They're cylindrical. And for my crazy plan of being able to have hot water from some boiling appliance, from a back boiler, and from solar, I need three coils. And you can buy these. And this is what it looks inside. It looks like a coil melangerie. You've got two sets at the top that go down to about one third from the bottom, and then a small coil at the bottom. So this is designed for two solar systems to be connected at the same time. I'm going to send solar and the boiler at the top and the back boiler at the bottom because it's going to be unregulated. So this is the... Why have I put this diagram in again? I can't remember. Oh, so this is showing you where the cylinder is. So we've got the cylinder. This is the main sort of heart of the system. And then I also need to put in a coffin. So water tanks, you can buy in various shapes and sizes. But these are very nice attractive tanks because they're quite low profile, long, and you can fit them through loft hatches easier. And they're completely sealed. You have a couple of hatches you put on the top, and this prevents stuff falling in. So we don't have the eponymous faulty towers, oh, we've got a dead bird in the tank. And I also realize that I'm going to run out of time very quickly. So anyway, this is the plumbing work going in. We have these nice swept bends coming down. And it all looks very fine and dandy. And this is the inside. Here's it filling up for the first time. I lie, this is it filling up the second time, because the first time, we'll cut to you in a moment. When I get to the plumbing nexus, so this is what we would describe as the airing cupboard. So this is where all the pipes are. So you can see on the bottom left picture, you can see three motor valves, which are these sort of boxy things with the voltage sticker on. And they are valves that open and close if we apply voltage. And they also have a couple of electrical contacts that tell the plumbing system that the valve has opened or closed. And we use that to turn, so once the valve has opened, we then use that signal to say, okay, the pump can now start because there is a free circuit, and you can also now turn the boiler on because the pump is working, and so you're not going to just cook the boiler. In my previous house, they bypassed a number of these steps, and the boiler would just over temp and turn off by itself, making various horrible ticking boiling noises in the process. You also have a pump, which is a black thing, so that pumps the water through the system. And beside that, there is a cylindrical doodah, what's it, which is a magnetic filter, which you now need to put on as well. And people tend to put these right above the boiler, where you, if you unscrew it, you now can't actually take the filter out because they put that in before the boiler. Bottom right picture, you can see a bit more space, and we've got all the plumbing, and you can see it's quite a tight space to work in. At this point, I should thank my dad, who is watching, and say that I have no idea how you could fit yourself in and contort yourself in to do all of that. And then above all of this is the expansion vessel and the filling loop and the pressure gauge. So it's quite a compact arrangement in an airing cupboard. Compact enough, I can still put shelves in for laundry. And a bit of advice, if you ever do this, buy the IKEA wooden ones that you can remove, so if you ever need to get to this, you don't have to spend half a day dismantling your airing cupboard. You can just pull it out and then walk in and fiddle all the bits and bobs. In the top right, you can see a black cylinder poking out the top of the heating cylinder, and that is the immersion heater. So that's a 3 kilowatt electric heater, and we went for the longest one possible. On these cylinders, they have a sticker that tells you the maximum permitted length. Ours was below that, but because of the number of coils in there, the company hadn't quite calculated that length properly, and it hits them. So we had to take it out and bend it multiple times to try and get it in and screw it in so it didn't actually foul on the inside. Goodness knows how I'm going to need to replace it, because the way we did that was by looking through the top port of the cylinder and eyeballing how much bend we needed. I presume I'll have to disassemble it if I need to do that, so we shan't talk about that any further. And this is one of the ways you solder in such a confined space. So this is a sheet of aluminium that is kind of held up by a pair of G-clamps and bits of wood to stop my wall being singed by a blowtorch whilst completing the solder joints. Radiators. We need radiators in a house. Most of the radiators in the house are of this awful kind, which are A, very small, so they have very small surface area. They're single-walled, so they have very small surface area, and they're single-finned, so they have very small surface area. Apart from, inexplicably, two tiny ones in the hall and the kitchen. So anyway, we've sacked them off. They're all knackered. Or one of them was in one of the spare bedrooms that was painted like Minecraft, with brown up to there, green, and then blue above, which was also painted brown. We've got 3 of these, nice ones for upstairs. So this is the advantage of having a plumber as a dad, in that they go to the merchants enough, and they know what stock's on sale, and they can arrange and find things. So part sourcing was incredibly easy. So we've got 3 nice matching radiators upstairs, nice big massive ones, double wall, double panel. And then I'm a sucker for cast iron ones, so I got some of those from the living room. So these came from a reclamation place. They need work doing, which is one of the reasons why they're cheap. In fact, this grey one, actually, that's the original factory primer, so somebody bought it and never fitted it. I then got this gigantic one, another double fin one that goes behind the front door, and that one is basically thermally coupled to upstairs a bit, so that one can basically hit hot most of the house by itself. And in the bathroom, got a nice towel rail, and in the kitchen, I thought, why don't I put a towel rail in the kitchen to keep the kitchen towels dry as well? That seems eminently sensible. And then we started filling the tank up with water. And I'm downstairs. I'm down in the upstairs of the house. My dad's in the loft. And he says, Ollie, can you get me a bucket? And I'm like, how urgently do you need it? Very. So I go down without much urgency, because he didn't say extremely urgent. And then I come back up and I say, where do you want me to put the bucket? Like, and I see him leaning behind the tank, holding it with his hand over something. Because one of the pipes into the tank wasn't properly inserted because we shifted the tank a bit and it popped out. And water just started spewing out of it. So put the bucket underneath, he told me to hold on, and then he went down and opened all the valves that fed off the tank to try and get the water out of the tank as fast as possible. It takes a long time to empty a water tank, as I've discovered, but I got some fantastic gurgling and gushing noises from the water cylinder underneath. I wish I'd recorded it. So anyway, you can see in here, this is some of the damage to my freshly repainted and sort of crack-plastered ceiling that I'd just done the week before. It's still like that now, and that's, 18 months later, because I haven't been asked to fix it yet. In case it happens again, is my rationality for this. So now have a look at conventional boilers. This is what I was intending to fit. They're like a kombi boiler, but without all the gubbins in. It just boils the water. Well, it doesn't boil, it heats the water. And that's it. You just have an input and an output, the gas and the condensate and air. That's it. You don't have all this complex switch gear, plumbing, switching, pumps and whatnot inside of this. And in fact, the boiler I've got has two buttons, reset and chimney sweep mode with a guy with a little top hat on, where it basically runs it with no gas usage, and but just turns the blower on to max to basically blow all the soot next door. Yeah? Here we go. So this is the condensate on this boiler. So previously they'd run it inside the house, where it kind of connected to the kitchen drain. Problem with this is they tend to fill with slime, and it buggers up fitting your kitchen, because you now have this pipe which has to have a slight fall on it to get to the sink, but you now have to put a kitchen in the way, and so it just makes a mess. So instead, we ran it outside, and you can see here, it goes down. You notice that it's quite a wide pipe, because we ran it inside, pipe lagging, inside a normal kitchen waste pipe to insulate it so it doesn't freeze. Because in winter, because it's only a very slow drip of water, it has a tendency to freeze, and then once it freezes, it backs your boiler up, and your boiler gets flooded, and it gets incredibly sad and incredibly expensive. And it terminates in the ground in a hole, which is full of limestone chippings. This is on a concrete slab. My dad thought this would be a quick 20-minute adventure to drill a hole through with a 6-inch hole saw on his SDS. It was not. This is a 1930s house with 1930s concrete. It's 6 inches thick. One trip to B&Q to get a very much bigger SDS drill, and 3 hours later, we have a condensate drill, hole in the ground. Here we go. So these are more appropriate names of the bits inside. So we have we continue on in case we have the spoilers, the box of wires. We have some Stevenson's kink, which is basically the U-bend that stops the air going back into the boiler. So because the condensate is connected to the flue pipe, if that condensate trap empties, you can end up with monoxide going in places it shouldn't, so you need to make sure that's primed. And then we have also the noise be gone. So we have a acoustic baffle in this boiler, so it runs whisper quiet. I couldn't tell it was on the first time I ran it. I was expecting some kind of like huge, like almost supersonic jet to turn up. And then we have, you know, the knob panel, which is in this case a heater, how hot do you want the water, and that's it. It hasn't got any other controls, no screen, no nothing. You have a light that blinks on when it's on, and it's off when it's not on. We have what I call fart control, which is what is that? Oh, it's the gas cock. So this controls how much gas goes in the thing. Number eight is redacted because we don't have that on this model. We have a mess maker, so that is a valve on the bottom that if you open it, it drains the entirety of your boiler system onto your kitchen worktop and makes a giant mess because it's all full of gunge. And we have a breathing tube, which is the air that comes into the boiler. And this is it fitted in the thing. And because I wasn't fitting it in a hurry, I could clean and replaster and paint behind the boiler, unlike literally everyone else, because with the combi boiler, because that's in your entire hot water system that's suddenly gone offline, you replace that same day at some incredible cost, so you don't have time to clear up. So when I took this off the wall, the previous boiler was sat on top of 3 layers of wallpaper from different eras that were gone brown and greasy because they never bothered to change it because who says, oh, you know what, I'm going to do without a boiler for 4 months. Whereas I thought, you know what, I value having it painted behind in the cupboard that I'm never going to look at instead of having water for 4 months. Snorkeling. So boilers can be snorkeled. So in the regulations in the building control regulations, which propagate through to the manufacturer's instructions, you can and cannot put the air inlet and exhaust output on your boiler anywhere you like. You have to put it in a number of specified locations. And we were getting close to the closeness of the conservatory to the airport. It was too close, and you could end up with monoxide seeping under the roofline. So they sell this. They call it a plume displacement kit, also known as a snorkel, where it takes the outlet of your boiler, and you can basically run a pipe for however long you want. So you can point it into your neighbor's bedroom if you wish. I like my neighbors. I'm not. This isn't anything about them. And so you can see here the black pipe. That's the snorkel. We also, because we realized that we could end up afterburning the kitchen extractor and sending that straight into the boiler, which was probably not a good idea, we put a downwards facing pipe on the extractor for the kitchen hob at the same time. And that's what the other pipe is in the picture. And if you look very closely, about 2 feet above all of this, you'll see a recently covered hole in the wall about in this you'll never see it with the back projection because it's too bright, in the wall, which is where the old kitchen extractor was, which we didn't realise because it didn't work, because they gaffer taped together and it all fell apart. Anyway, so now we're going to talk about sundials. So in the 1980s, Honeywell came up with a whole load of like wiring. Oh, I've only got 1 minute left. Good Lord. They came up with a whole load of wiring. We have S, which is what I've got. They have Y, which is crazy. W, which is really odd. And C, which you should never use. This is what the wiring looks like for Y. It makes no sense, which we'll call Y. This is S, which is what I'm going to use. I want to actually use S plus for two sets of heating. This is what the wiring diagram looks like if you want to add FOSS protection. That's where the valve goes, just there, that white box on the doodle wants it. This is the central heating wiring diagram, showing all the bits and bobs. This is the thermostat. I've got a 1980 smart home thermostat. This is the central control box, which controls all the timing and turning things on and off. This is the thing for the immersion heater, so you don't leave it on, costing you a fortune, like one of my old housemates used to do. Wiring centers. They look horrid. You can buy better ones, really nice ones that don't work very well. You can get modern ones that are too small, or you can make your own. This is my one. The electrician wants me to make some so I can sell them to him. I want to put a back boiler in to make hot water. This is how you kill it up. It goes in. You get hot water. It's gravity fed, so there's no valve, because you're not allowed to put valves on an uncontrolled heat source. Heats the hot water back in there. Lovely. Hot water radiator as well. You get free heating upstairs. And it needs an air tube under the floor. Otherwise, you kind of suck all the air out of your house and monoxide yourself. Not very good. They might be illegal. People say they're very illegal. In Southampton, you're not allowed to put one in this area here. And yes, it is a hand-drawn map. It is then scanned. We have laws. They do all these things. We're going to look at one of them now, document L. It says various things, including you shouldn't replace a heating source with a less efficient one. My back boiler isn't replacing my heating source. It's supplementing it. Doesn't apply. However, if you have a heat pump and you don't like it, you can't put a gas one in because it's not the same thing. You can't go from a 3 times efficient heat source to a 0.8% efficient heat source. That's illegal. There we go. Involves a fuel switch. You have to be the same primary energy has to matter. And if you're using renewable technology, you have to make. If you're replacing a solar array, you have to put a bigger one in than the one you're replacing, which is fine until we hit the efficiency limit on solar panels. And you also have to put a connection for district heating in if you're building a new house. And then solar heating. The water goes to the panel and into the cylinder and back again. You can either have it pressurized or non-pressurized. If anyone knows the difference and which one is better, please tell me. I have no idea. I haven't bought it yet. Please tell me in the bar. And then we get to this at the end. So this is my bathroom when we took the bath out. I didn't have a working bathroom until about 6 months ago. So buying a house is a stressful process, especially when you realize you're running out of time. Any questions, you can find me after Steve Moll's talk, or in the bar, or have an electrical emergency and I might turn up. There we go.